in a year that has been so improbable, the impossible has happened.
A shot on Elo. Good! The Bulls win it!
You know what time it is.
The most amazing, sensational, dramatic.
Oh, blocked by James! LeBron James with the rejection!
Holy cow! Oh, my God! I don't believe it! It just continues!
Excellence.
Welcome back into another episode of the Sports Hour. This is Mitch Moe.
And this is Dallin. Guys, welcome back into the podcast. It is June 1st. It's the first day of June. Mitch, we just had a three-day weekend.
Longer going to be May.
It's not going to be May. You're right. There's no pun for June. Unfortunately, that is a bummer.
Big bummer.
Big bummer. But it is June. It is June 1st. And we are here with another podcast episode. Some fun stuff in store today. We're going to talk, obviously, about the NBA and the NBA Finals, which gets underway tomorrow. Again, June 2nd. Game one of the NBA Finals between the Warriors and the Celtics. So we'll get into all that, give our thoughts on this matchup and who we think is going to be taking home the NBA title this year as well. We've got some fun stuff on the back end, some forgotten all-stars, like a lot of top fives, like not just one top five, folks. It's going to get a little crazy up in here. It's the offseason, you know, so we got to do different stuff, you know. The content doesn't write itself. We've got to do some work, and so that's what we've got in store today. Should be a fun time.
Very fun time. I'm excited because you have a top five yourself. So like you're gonna join in on the top five party, which I love. So no, this would be a fantastic episode. Maybe it's a top 61 episode of all time.
Yeah, I feel comfortable saying that, you know, 2 minutes into it, that this is going to be top 61.
Yeah, I don't want to go too spicy, but yeah.
We haven't done it yet. Let's not set the expectations too high.
Yeah, you know? Exactly.
And then come out flat here. Mitch is starting off strong here, and you guys can't see this because this is an audio medium, not a visual medium, but Mitch has a beautiful hat on. As we know, Mitch Moe, the big fan of the minor league baseball hats, and he's got a great one in store today here on this Microsoft Teams call. It's the Trash Pandas, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, the Rocket City Trash Pandas. Great name. Great
incredible
name.
Incredible.
Double A affiliate for the Angels, I believe. So.
Yeah, and obviously a trash panda is a raccoon for those not familiar. So it is, I'm going to try to describe this. Duck down a little bit for me so I can see the full thing. So it is a panda with an American flag that has only four stars on it. So I don't know what version of the United States this trash panda exists.
Oh, he's got a big old noggin. It's covered the other 46.
There's four stars, and he's wearing what looks like a space suit. That's what it looks like to me. A panda is in a space suit with the American flag. Without the context, it is just an absurd hat. But with the context of the baseball team, it's great.
I'd like to imagine it's moon landing trash panda.
Like it's the Neil Armstrong of raccoons.
Yeah, he's the Neil Armstrong of raccoons. He's in the spacesuit. He's got the American flag. Yeah, it's
one small step for raccoon, one giant leap for marsupial kind. I don't know. Is it a marsupial? I don't know my animals.
This is a varmint.
Oh, is that right? Is that an actual category? I don't know.
I don't know
animals.
It's a specific species. But
we need to get a zoologist on this podcast for some expertise.
I think we could get one. Find any Australian. All Australians are nature experts, and I don't understand. Like, you see those videos and they're like just out on their little pontoons and they're just like a crocodile comes up out of there like, "Oh, hey mate, how you doing?" And like picks him up by his hands and like starts rubbing his belly and nothing bad happens to him. But if I go out on that pontoon and try to do that to that crocodile, I'm headless. I'm headless Mitch from now on.
Yeah, you have delicious American meat on you. You know what I mean? We're full of saturated fats and all that good stuff that animals just crave.
I would be a dead person. Okay, that's how bad it would turn out for me.
But Australia is a whole other place. There, they got dangerous stuff in the wild. There's expanse of land in the middle of the country that just no one's for miles or kilometers. It's crazy. Crazy out there.
Oh gosh.
We should take the podcast on the road. Do an episode down under.
Do it on the continent
of Australia.
Go to Sydney
or Perth.
Melbourne.
Perth would be great.
Melbourne, yeah. Or no, just some like random cattle farmer in like the middle of Australia. There's nothing within hundreds of miles of him.
They wouldn't have Wi-Fi for us to do the show. So that'd actually probably be an issue.
That would be a little bit.
We're thinking logistically, but you know.
AT&T doesn't reach that far.
Mitch, should we start the podcast off with some news?
Oh shit. Yeah, let's do it. Let's take a look around the news and I'm all flustered. Let's take a look at the news and notes around the world of sports. Let's get into the news! We started out rocky, but we brought it home.
So. Yeah, it worked, you know. It worked. Mitch, let us begin with I'm going to be honest, one of my favorite sports stories I've seen in such a long time. Just an absurd happenstance here. We're talking in the world of Major League Baseball. But what we're really talking about, Mitch, it's not about baseball. It's not about two baseball players. It's not about a suspension. This is about fantasy football, baby. Because just like the simple folks like you and I, these million-dollar baseball players care about one thing and one thing only, and that's their fantasy football team. And we had quite a kerfuffle, if you will, last week prior to Friday's game. Cincinnati Reds outfielder Tommy Pham slapped Jock Peterson over a fantasy football dispute. He was subsequently suspended 3 games by Major League Baseball for his actions. Now, just like we're going to get more into this, but just picture this, folks, like you're listening. Just picture this. Somebody, you know, you went to high school with plays fantasy football. You find out on Facebook or Instagram that they were suspended from work for 3 days. Because they got into a physical altercation over their fantasy football league, you would think they are insane. Like what kind of person would get suspended from work over fantasy football? But that's what's happened here, Mitch. And there's multiple parts of this. I'm going to break this down for you, and then I got to get your reaction. But on the fantasy football side of this, reportedly, so they're in this league together. And during this last season, I think this was in like October, there was a player on Jock Peterson's roster who was not playing that week, was out that week, but was not on the injured reserve. Now, in his league, you were able to move players who were not playing, who were designated out, into your injured reserve temporarily that week, freeing up a roster spot, right, for you to go pick up somebody else off the waiver. So that's what Jock Peterson did. Tommy Pham took issue with that, and now Jock Peterson claims that Tommy Pham was currently doing the exact same thing at that time, had a player that was out on his IR. But besides that point, this happens during the season. You know, this is a money league. They pay to be in this. There's some, you know, investment there, and Tommy Pham takes issues. Well, recently in this fantasy group chat, which if you play fantasy, you're in a group chat. It is a fascinating place sometimes, the types of things that get discussed in there. Well, Jock Peterson drops a meme, a gif in here, a baseball related gif, disparaging the Padres. Now, Tommy Pham plays for the Reds, but did play for the Padres last year. You know, basically saying the Dodgers, the Giants were better than the Padres. Tommy Pham took issue with that. This is the quote. This is the quote from Mr. Pham here. I slapped Jock. He said some shit I don't condone. I had to address it. It was regarding my former team. I didn't like that, and I didn't like the sketchy shit going on in the fantasy league. We had too much money on the line, So I look at it like there's a code. You're fucking with my money, then you're going to say some disrespectful shit. There's a code to this. Like, Mitch, what is going on here?
I want to preface my reaction with this. You played a fantasy league. We play in two fantasy leagues together.
Yes.
We know a lot of people that play in fantasy leagues, and you were talking about how nuts they seem during this. All fantasy players are nuts, okay? We're all a little bit weird and crazy that way when it comes to our fantasy team. So we take like an unhealthy amount of pride into our fantasy football leagues. And so this type of reaction, while over the top, does not shock me one bit. Like, I don't think it's that shocking. However, the absurdity behind the suspension over a fantasy football dispute is probably the funniest thing I've seen all year in the world of sports. The funniest thing. Come to find out after the fact, Mike Trout is the commissioner in this league. Yes. And Tommy Pham said to reporters on Tuesday, he is the worst commissioner in fantasy sports. So clearly Tommy Pham has not just an issue with Jock Peterson, but Mike Trout and the rule itself. Like, he is, there is such a thing as take, like, obviously he's paying money into this. And so, like, you know, he's probably going to take it a little bit more seriously than maybe you and I would take our fantasy leagues, because he's probably playing high stakes fantasy football. He makes millions playing baseball, but like the level this guy is taking it to is something I think he should seek out help for. I think he should seek out help and maybe just not participate in that league anymore.
So it's amazing, Mitch, because he's not. So this is from Jock Peterson. Now, this just puts all of this into an even weirder space. This is according to Jock Peterson talking to reporters. This is where he showed his phone to reporters. He showed the GIF that he sent. He showed the messages that he had with Tommy Pham apologizing when it was taken out of, you know, when there was some offense taken to that. This is what Jock Peterson said. It was meant to be all fun and games, no hard feelings. Sorry if you took it that way. And then about 2 weeks later, after like week four or five, he ended up leaving the league, and there's been no communication since. So Tommy Pham just straight up left the league in the middle of it, hates the commissioner, is pissed at this rule. He probably was sucking and he was like, F this, I'm out of here. And then 2 months later, at work, you're at your workplace, you're with a coworker, and you assault him over a GIF that he sent in your fantasy league. What is going on? You're absolutely right. He needs to take a sabbatical from fantasy. Take 2 years off, my friend. Cleanse yourself. Get to a better place, because that
Look,
is
I would like bad. I would like to think that we have some fantasy sports listeners that listen to this podcast. So let this be a valuable lesson. And Dallin, you and I have experienced this in our own leagues, where people take the trash talk too seriously. Trash talk is trash talk. It's no harm, no foul. It's never meant to be personal. But like, let this be a lesson. Trash talk is just trash talk. You just got to let it happen. You got to learn how to dish it back. If you can't take the heat, get it out of the kitchen. And it looks like Tommy Pham knew where the exit of the kitchen was, and he
Yeah, I mean, don't get suspended from work over your fantasy league. Just I just think avoid that generally. Not a good decision.
So dumb.
There. Just a reminder that even millionaires and professional athletes are simple people like you and I, Mitch, who just get very mad over fantasy football and can't handle it. And you kind of love to see it. You really do. Mitch, another bit of news here as we move on to the NBA. This happened a couple weeks ago, but we haven't had a chance to talk about it on the podcast yet. But the NBA draft lottery took place a handful of weeks ago. Now, we're about 3 weeks away, I believe, from the date of the 2022 NBA draft. But on May 17th, the NBA held their draft lottery, and the Orlando Magic jumped up a selection to earn the number one overall pick in this upcoming draft. They're followed in the top five by the following teams: Oklahoma City Thunder at number two, Houston Rockets at number three, Sacramento Kings at number four, and the Detroit Pistons at number five. So obviously Orlando a big winner there. NBA draft, it should be interesting to see we're a couple weeks, we're about 2 weeks from this happening, right? So we've been able to get some intel on maybe where teams are starting to lean. The things that I have seen suggest that Orlando is pretty locked into Jabari Smith Jr., the big man out of Auburn, which would make sense with sort of what they have around. Though I do think any of Paolo Banchero, Chet Holmgren, Jabari Smith, those sort of top three in that group will be in contention there. But it seems seemingly Orlando's leaning Jabari Smith sets the stage for Oklahoma City to have that pick at number two and so on. But again, those three guys at the top, Chet Holmgren, the big man out of Gonzaga, tall, skinny, plays outside, just a really unique player, unique size, and someone who's going to have a high ceiling, but is going to scare some people in the NBA. Got Jabari Smith, the big man out of Auburn, defensive presence, a huge defensive presence, but has a ton of offensive upside. If he could secure the shooting, he could be really good. And then you have Paolo Banchero, who's a forward, point forward type. You think like a Michael Porter Jr. Without the injury history that had him sort of dropping in his draft, but you know, 6'10", big size, can handle the ball, can play on the outside. And will be an intriguing those three players and Banchero out of Duke, excuse me. Those are the sort of the top three guys. Jaden Ivey, guard out of Purdue, in that mix. Shadon Sharp, the guard out of Kentucky, in that mix, I would say. But those are probably the top three there. And again, reports right now, maybe Orlando's leaning Jabari Smith, but I think any of those three are in play, and it will be interesting to see how this sort of plays out. But that's the NBA draft lottery. I was kind of rooting for the Kings to maybe get a better pick here, but they are at four. They will have a shot at one of those top guys, but I don't know what else. Looking at the lottery, the Kings and the Trailblazers were the other team. I was hoping for Dame and them to maybe get lucky, get up in the lottery. Portland's got the seventh pick, so not bad for them, but we'll be interesting to see how this plays out.
Yeah, I actually have an announcement to make, speaking of the NBA. I have an announcement to make. I was talking with Jordan Fox about this actually during game 7 on Sunday night. I'm staking my flag on an NBA team. I'm going to become a fan. And I'm going to be a fan of the Sacramento Kings.
Okay.
I like the direction this team is headed. Definitely in a young stage with, you know, lots of young talent, a hopeful future ahead of them. So I'm really pulling for the Kings. I was pulling for the Kings to get towards that top pick as well. Just don't draft a guard. I know that like after those top three, there's like a run of guards that are likely to go that 4, 5, 6 range. And I don't want them to reach for a big man either, but you know, maybe a guard's just in the hands for, you know, in their hand again for them. And they'll have to take like a Shaedon Sharpe or something like that. But you know, I would love to see like Chet Holmgren fall to 4, but I don't think that's going to happen. But yeah. I'm staking my flag as a Sacramento Kings fan. Wow. And so
I'm a sick man. I give the King of being fans
of bad franchises.
I guess you accepted it at this point. You're like, because if you, let's say you choose to be a Warriors fan, well, you're dooming them to mediocrity for the next rest of your life,
not
right?
Only
so that wouldn't be fair to them. So you might as well embrace a team that already sucks, because if they continue to suck, well, it's not your fault. They were like that before.
Yeah. Yeah. this is a sad fandom to be. I am a Bears fan, an A's fan, a Kraken fan, and now I am a Kings fan. That is quite the sad lineup to be right now. But you know what? I am embracing the reality of someday things will get better. It may not be tomorrow, but it'll be someday.
You're one optimistic son of a gun, man. I appreciate it. Don't forget about Alabama, by the way. Roll Tide.
Oh, well, yes, I got that going for me.
You do have the Crimson Tide.
That was not necessarily by my choice, though. So,
hey, well, that's why it's even more true, right? Because you took the test and that's what you got. You know, you selected it, whether you knew it or not, subconsciously. You loved it, you know, you got that.
I could have picked a national champion, but
you could have. It was between Alabama and Georgia. You sort of missed out there.
You're right.
Mitch, The final bit of news we wanted to mention here in this segment is the cover of the next Madden 2023 was announced, and no surprise here, it is the legend himself, the namesake of this great game. John Madden will be featured on the cover, Madden 2023. Obviously, he passed this last year, so of course it makes sense to have him on the cover. I couldn't see it any other way. Great choice by EA and the NFL there to put John Madden on the cover, and it's not going to help the game any. It'll probably be the same game that they've been making, but, you know, you love to see it. Good decision on the cover.
Yeah, I mean, in my mind, after Mr. Madden passed, there was no other choice. Like, it had to be John Madden. So, like, yeah, great gesture, and the right choice was made to put him on the cover. You're right, the game will probably still be the same exact game it was the year before with no improvements. But you know what? I probably will still buy it. So,
exactly. I mean, it's not stopping us. Yeah, that's for sure. You know, we're still there. So,
yeah.
Oh man. All righty, Mitch. Well, that's going to do it for the news segment. Let's get into the NBA playoffs, and let's start with a little conference finals recap. In the Eastern Conference, Mitch, we had the 1 seed Miami, 2 seed Boston. We both saw this as a long competitive series. I had picked Boston in 6. You had picked Miami in 7. Sure enough, we were in Miami for a game 7 in this Eastern Conference Finals, but it was the Boston Celtics succeeding and earning that spot in the NBA Finals out of the East, Mitch. And, you know, again, I picked Boston in this series in 6. I felt like they had a lot of momentum and better health going into this series. And I mean, you saw that for Miami, right? Kyle Lowry hobbled. Tyler Hero missed a lot of time. Even when he did play, he was hobbled. So it was the Jimmy Butler show with the Bam Adebayo and Struce and PJ Tucker, right? Whoever else would show up. And I think that that's in large part the difference here for Miami. Now, Boston had its health, you know, issues as well. Marcus Smart at least missed 1 game, I know. Robert Williams has been recovering from this injury. They weren't affected nearly as much as Miami was. But this was the type of series I expected, the series I wanted, 7 games. None of the games were particularly competitive. A lot of blowouts in this series, but ultimately goes to game 7. And Boston prevails on the back of a total team effort. I think that's what's most impressive to me about the Celtics team, Mitch, is that it is not a superstar carrying this team over the hump, right? It's not some all-time performance of the star. It is a full effort, and we'll talk about some of the specific stars on this team, like Jason Tatum and how well he is playing, but it's Tatum, it's Brown, it's Smart, it's Derek White, it's Al Horford. It is everybody doing their job, winning with that total team effort. And that's what makes this Boston team so dangerous. And that, to me, was the key for them getting it done in the Eastern Conference Finals, was not having to rely on just a Jimmy Butler to just get it done, because that's all you had. You know, they were able to approach this as a team with that health, with that cohesiveness that they earned down the stretch. And ultimately, here they, you know, find themselves in the NBA Finals.
Yeah, I mean, super competitive series. Like you said, there weren't a whole lot of games that finished tight. I think, I could be wrong, maybe before this last 4-point victory for the Celtics, the closest margin of victory was like 8 points in game 6. Yep. So like, there wasn't any games that were like particularly really, really close. But you're right. The Heat's ailments caught up with them. And I think they put on a valiant effort. They were able to put together whoever they could around Jimmy Butler, who's still a stone cold killer in my book, an absolute dog. And I think he carried this Heat team probably as far as he could while they were unhealthy. But the Celtics are just the most complete team right now, I think, in basketball on both ends of the court. You know, they have the ability to go and put up buckets, but God, they play great defense.
So good.
I mean, it is watertight defense from the Boston Celtics, and that showed throughout the course of the series. We look at that Game 5 performance where they held Miami to 80. We look at Max Strauss and Jimmy Butler that were starting to get hot at the end of Game 7 there. They lock it down and hold them under 100. So, the Celtics, it's not just a Marcus Smart defensive performance. Like, all over the court, Derek White in the paint is an absolute stud. Al Horford has old man grit, which I love, and he's able to provide on this, particularly the defensive side of the ball, but even the offensive side, even offensively. So the Celtics, man, the right team won here. And this is going to be a fantastic finals matchup between them. And I guess we'll now talk about the Western Conference Finals. So,
yeah. Before we move on to the West, the overall defense, I think that's what matters. And not to take anything away from Marcus Smart, but that's why he won Defensive Player of the Year, right? Of course it has to do with his individual defense and how good he is as an individual defender. There's arguably nobody better on the perimeter than Marcus Smart. He guards multiple positions at a very high level, and he is he's the key that makes this whole defense work. But there are fantastic individual defenders all across the board here. Jaylen Brown is an incredible perimeter defender. Robert Williams is a great young defensive big. Grant Williams, playing that small ball big, does so well off the bench, and they rely on him so much. You mentioned Al Horford and his veteran experience. So, yeah, this is like a whole team that is locked in on the defensive end, is winning through defense and using it to open up their offense and relying on their young stars, their young wing players, Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown, and Marcus Smart at times, to make plays and to get it done on offense. And it's been a winning formula. It's worked. It's got them to the finals, right? And we'll talk in a second about what it is, it the path to winning the finals. But certainly impressive to see from this Celtics team. Mitch, let's talk about the Western Conference Finals briefly here, and then we'll get into this matchup. But we have the 3-seed Golden State Warriors and the 4-seed Dallas Mavericks. And this wasn't a close series, Mitch. We both picked the Warriors in 7. It was hard to pick against Steph, Clay, Draymond, Steve Kerr in this Warriors dynasty, as great as Luka had been in the first two series in this Dallas team. And you know what we saw in this was everything sort of catching up to Dallas, right? Golden State wins this in 5 games. And there wasn't really a point where I thought Dallas was going to win this series, honestly, from the when it started. And I think that's just a testament, one, to how good the Warriors team is, and two, how much of the success of this Mavericks team was sort of Luka as that catalyst, right? The energy, the talent of Luka just permeating across this roster and really elevating everybody to another level. It caught up to them here, but this, for Dallas, this is great experience moving forward. You've got that taste. You've had some success, but you're left wanting more. You're left hungry, coming back fighting next year. And you know the specific areas where you need to improve this roster around Luka to be a championship contender. And that's a valuable experience for a front office and an organization to have. So I think for Dallas, it's all positive, even though it wasn't a close series. For Golden State, though, this is just the culmination of a couple years of downturn, right? I mean, it's not been a good couple years for the Warriors, and they've been injured and they've sucked and they've had some top picks, and they've retooled this roster around this big three, and it worked again. Like, they got back to the finals again. And Mitch, what impresses me most about this Warriors team is this is not the same formula that they used pre-KD. It's not the same formula they used with KD. This is a new formula of winning. This is a new configuration, a new style. Obviously, there's a lot of elements of this that's very similar, but new players, new pieces, and Steve Kerr and this team have put it together successfully enough to get back to the finals with a new cast of supporters around this trio. And to me, I just didn't think it was going to happen. I didn't think it was going to happen. And all credit goes to the Warriors for pulling this off.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's really going to be really, really hard to pick against the Warriors. I want to go back to the Mavericks just a little bit because you mentioned Luka. This was the first series, I think, this is the first series this entire playoffs where we saw that he was human. Like, he could put up bad games. A lot of people were talking about his lack of effort, and I put that in quotation marks on, in transition back to defense. I think the dude was just gassed. Like, he's had good supporting performances, but he's by and large carried this team this far. And I think that they're one star away, and I just want to make a suggestion to Dallas that maybe you think about going and trying to get a Dame Lillard and bring into that guy that obviously is having a rough time in Portland. They're not winning any. They're definitely not a winning team right now. Bring in a second guy that can be with Luka. And if you want to make this push again, I think you need to bring in another big name. And I think Dame Lillard might be just what the doctor ordered for the Mavericks. Because I think Luka, though hyper talented, he needs just one more guy.
Yeah, I mean, he just needs someone to carry that offensive load, right? And that is why you see the poor effort on transition defense, because he has to expend all his energy on the offensive end because he is the offense, right? And like we want to judge these top players to show effort on this, but like LeBron does the same thing, right? All these offensive stars, they do the same thing. KD does the same thing. Go watch these guys. Why? Because that's their job, is to be the offensive catalyst. And it's other people's job on the team to play some defense, right? And so you're going to get that. You're just going to get that. Luka's not the most athletic player in the world. He's not in the best shape in the world. It is what it is. It's fine. He's not the problem here. And if you're the Mavericks, you hope that you learned lessons through this playoff run. You saw exactly what you need to put around him, and you go execute that, whether that's Dame Lillard. There were some rumors about Rudy Gobert, and pairing a great defensive center alongside Luka there, and they'd be great in the pick and roll together. Like, whatever star it is that they feel like they can get and they think will help, take the pressure off of Luke and give that second option, they need to go do it. And this playoff run certainly gave them the blueprint there. And for Golden State, here we are back in the finals yet again. What, the sixth time in like 9 years? It's insane, this run that the Warriors have been on. And again, after two down seasons, I really didn't think they'd get back here. It's so hard to get to the NBA Finals. Your window is so finite and you don't know when it ends. And I just thought it's going to end eventually. KD left. They couldn't beat Kawhi in Toronto and then they got injured. And I just thought they'll just never quite get back there. But here we are.
Yeah.
Here we are. They're back and they're taking on the Celtics, Mitch. Game one in San Francisco on Thursday night. Obviously, that makes the Warriors the team with a home court advantage here. I want to bring this up before we give our picks here in this series, because I thought it was interesting. We do, when we preview the NBA for the last couple of years, we've done some tier rankings, right, where we put the NBA teams into tiers as a way to sort of approach the season and sort of stake our claims on who we think are the legit contenders or not. And I did not have the Celtics or the Warriors in my top tier, in my A tier. I had them both in the B tier, which was solid playoff teams, obviously, championship potential, but they had some glaring questions, something that kept them out of that top tier for me. And I just wanted to read what I wrote down, these notes that I had about these teams, and sort of reflect on how they've solved that answer, because clearly these two teams have made it to the finals, so they were not B tier. Certainly got it figured out. But this is what I had about Boston. I said they have a clear ceiling. Clearly not true. My ceiling did not include the NBA Finals. Clear ceiling was not correct. My question was, can Tatum go MVP level? That was my question going into the season. What was going to carry them over the top? I think what we learned is that he didn't need to. Like, they won this year because of the defense and their eliteness on the defensive end. And I don't know why we didn't see that coming more. I mean, think about the Lakers team from a couple years ago that won the NBA title. It was not their offense, right? I mean, AD, LeBron, like, great, but the defense that Lakers team played, led by Frank Vogel and that coaching staff, was top tier. It was one of the best in the NBA. That's why they won the NBA Finals that year. It was their defense. And the Milwaukee Bucks had a fantastic defense last year. Too often, I think we overlook in the NBA how good a dominant defensive team can be and how it translates to championship success. And I think that's the one lesson that I learned from Boston this year, that a team defense constructed the way that this is playing at this high level, that's the sort of teams we should be looking at before the season as that teams that can make that leap to championship contender.
Yeah. And I don't know why. And again, like, you're the basketball guy. So, like, I don't want to question anything you're saying, but I don't know why it seems like to me the league lost sight of how valuable defense is. Because, like, just look at those Bulls teams from the 90s. I think that's the best example you can go back to, is like, and probably the most recent of like the recent, you know, the recent, you know, dynasties success stories, is they were good offensively, right? But the defense, Scottie Pippen, Dennis Rodman, Ron Harper, MJ played good perimeter defense. Like, they were so solid. They were so solid defensively. I believe they held the Utah Jazz to the lowest score in playoff history.
Yeah, it was like
history.
Under 60 points in it that like 98 finals or something.
It was,
yeah,
54 yeah. points. Like, that's what the old saying goes, defense wins championships. Mm-hmm. I think we're seeing that again now. Like, we're seeing multiple recent examples of like, wow, defense can carry you a long way.
No, 100%. I think that's the biggest lesson that I took away from what the Celtics were able to do. And the question about Tatum going MVP level, well, he was in the MVP conversation this year, especially in the second half of the season. And I do think that he's going to find himself in that conversation more and more moving forward, especially after this finals run puts him more on the map nationally. Fans, everybody gets to see this guy ball on the biggest stage. That certainly helps your case. So in a way he did, but he didn't this year, despite the fact that he did improve. Ultimately, it was how good this team was. And after moving on from Brad Stevens, moving him into the front office and giving the job to Ime Udoka, who had a lot of experience as an assistant coach with the Spurs and then obviously was with the Nets before this. But that was a risky move. And to bet that was going to pay off in year one to the NBA Finals is pretty surprising. So all credit goes to Boston and the organization for making the moves that they did. And ultimately, you know, they found themselves here, you know, right in the NBA Finals. So clearly paid off.
Oh, yeah, 100%.
Mitch, for the Warriors side of this, now this is the note I had on Golden State. Again, they were a B tier for me before the season. I said, these are the notes I had. Klay Thompson health, biggest concern for me. How did he look coming back from the injury? How will Wiseman and Kuminga contribute? So my questions were the health of Klay Thompson and the young pieces around the trio, right? How are they going to look? Because remember, the finals runs against the Cavs, the four straight years against the Cavs that we all remember. Think of the role players on those teams, right? This was Steph, Klay, Draymond in their young prime, right? Mid-20s. Late 20s. Right now they're in their 30s, but this was a different era for them. They were the young players. And who were they surrounded by? Sean Livingston, Andrew Bogut, Andre Iguodala, right? I mean, veterans. We're talking about guys that had 10 plus years in the league. Leandro Barbosa, right? I mean, guys that just knew their role. You execute your role, and the other guys are going to carry the load, and that
David
is the winning formula.
David West.
I mean, just there's some great names that played on these teams, and yet this year's team, Moses Moody, Jonathan Kuminga, Wiseman hasn't even been playing. You had a huge year from Andrew Wiggins, which is something I did not see coming. He wasn't even a guy I mentioned in this. Andrew Wiggins was an all-star starter, right? We can laugh about that now. We laughed about that then, but I mean, he's starting in the NBA Finals now. That was probably right. I mean, let's be honest. So it is, it's just a testament. I think this is truly shows how great that big three is. Their energy and Steve Kerr and his coaching staff and his ability to get the most out of whatever they have had in Golden State, whatever they've had around these guys, whether it was Kevin Durant, whether it was veterans, whether it's these young players, second years, rookies, they're getting the most out of these players to a winning degree, to a point that brings them to the NBA Finals. That was what was most impressive to me about this Warriors team. The young group gelled. Klay Thompson is not the Klay Thompson of old. He's not. It hasn't mattered, though. It hasn't mattered. That hasn't kept him out of the finals. They're still there. He's still a great player, but he's not that same guy, and it hasn't mattered because the team around them is playing at a high level, and that gives hope that they could win a finals, right, with the way that this team is playing.
Well, and you talked about Andrew Wiggins. You mentioned who was the other young guy you mentioned? I'm sorry. I'm totally blanking on his name.
Oh, Moses Moody, Jonathan Kuminga.
Yeah, all those guys. I mean, we haven't even mentioned Jordan Poole yet. And
thank you.
Yeah. So they have this big three, but they also have this young core coming in behind them. They're not going to fill their shoes seamlessly. It's not going to be the same as Steph, Clay, and Draymond, but like they're starting to step in and take on larger roles in the offense and the defense and filling it as those guys start to, you know, wane off in their career, they're starting to ramp up and step in. So like they have really set themselves up for a smooth transition. They're clearly not going to be the 73 win Warriors of old, right? They're just not going to be. They're probably not going to win as many titles without the big three as they did with. But this is a very well-rounded team with solid veterans and a good young core that I think is. I mean, it's hard to imagine, and I don't want to step too far on a limb and say like they're going to be around for 10 more years, but like 5 more years doesn't seem outrageous. Like if they could just like hang out and like stay healthy, like Steph can shoot threes until he's 40. I'm totally confident.
So can Clay. I mean, those guys got it down.
Yeah, exactly. And Draymond can retire at 36, 35 and be completely content because there's guys behind him getting ready to step in and take over that role. So like,
well, yeah, and he's got the job on TNT pregame and postgame already locked up. You know, he's got the media jobs already.
He's probably gonna fill Chuck's shoes.
I mean, come on, like he can get a job doing that easy. So you ain't got nothing to worry about. No, I'm with you. I mean, that's what's scary about this Warriors team is it feels like this could just be the beginning of another run, right? Whether it's, I mean, we're not talking. Maybe it's not five straight finals in a row, but you know, another run of contention here as Steph, Clay, Draymond are still in the primes or at least the late era of their primes in the NBA. And perhaps these young players around them can sort of sustain that for a little bit. So Mitch, let's make our picks then. All right. Game one, Thursday night in San Francisco. Warriors have home court advantage here. Steve Kerr versus a rookie head coach on the other side in Ime Udoka. Young emerging stars versus the faces of the league that we're all so familiar with. Who's winning this series, Mitch, and how many games?
The series is a true toss-up. I mean, a true toss-up. Look, the Boston Celtics have no holes in their defense. And those are the defenses that are... That's the only kind of defense that can beat the Warriors, is a defense with no holes. However, if Andrew Wiggins can handle Luka Doncic, he can handle Jason Tatum. I think that Golden State has enough defensively to hang around with Boston defensively. Boston's probably going to outperform it defensively and slow the Warriors down a step. I got to give the Warriors in seven by the slimmest of margins, because it's hard to pick against the dynasty. The dynasty. Yeah. I don't care if they haven't been in the playoffs the last 2 years. It's really hard to pick against the Warriors. And I would like to say that the Boston Celtics should be winning this purely based off defense. I just raved about it for 2-3 minutes in a row. But I just cannot pick against the Warriors. Warriors in seven in a the tightest finals I think we're going to see in a long time.
Oh, Mitch, this is a tough one. Okay, because I think you broke this down really well. I believe the Warriors offense and the Boston Celtics defense essentially cancel each other out.
It's a wash.
Right. Boston's defense is very, very good. Golden State's offense is very, very good. Those are going to be a wash. The winner of this series is going to be the winner of the matchup between the Golden State Warriors defense and the Boston Celtics offense throughout this 6-7 games, because it's going to go that long. These are the two scenarios I really see, Mitch. Either the Golden State Warriors continue to do what they did in this playoff run, which is pretty much dominate, not really struggle, and they win this series in 5 or 6 games, or this goes the distance and the Celtics pull off the miracle and upset the Warriors in game 7. And that is the reality I'm choosing.
Wow.
It pains me to do this as a Lakers fan. Okay. And I just want to, like, this is without team bias in here, because we're talking NBA, and as an NBA fan, I got to pick the team I really think is going to win this. And you said it earlier, Boston is the most complete team in the NBA right now. And I don't disagree with that statement. So I got to pick the Celtics. So I'm picking Boston in 7 to get it done on the road in San Francisco to win the NBA Finals over the Warriors.
Does Gary Payton's return on the defensive side of the balls for the Warriors
could absolutely play a factor?
Could play a factor?
Could absolutely play a factor. Could absolutely play a factor. But I trust the defense to succeed over 7 games on Boston more than I do Golden State. And yes, Andrew Wiggins had a great game against a great series against Luka. But there's nobody else that scares you on offense on Dallas. But you can't just leave Jaylen Brown out there, because Jaylen Brown can drop 40 just as easily as Jason Tatum can. Like, let's be honest, right? So there's more options out there in this Boston team. It's going to make it more of a challenge for Golden State. So I this is tough, Mitch, but I'm leaning Celtics. So I'm going to go Boston in 7. Mitch is picking Golden State in 7. And this is just going to be a fun series. Come on. It doesn't get better than this.
This might be an all-time classic. I mean,
I hope so.
That Cavs Warriors series from 2016, I believe it was.
Yeah.
This is going to be up there with that. That 98 Bulls championship run. It's going to be up there. It's going to be up there with that series. I mean, there's no question. This is going to be fantastic.
You know, and this is fun. I'll throw this last thing in here, and then we'll wrap this up. But I've been thinking about this for a couple days, Mitch, since this sort of got figured out, this would be a matchup we had. There are a lot of interesting parallels between the Big Three in Golden State and this Big Three in Boston. I mean, you've got a young core, young nucleus. Think about that 2015 Warriors team, this young nucleus, kind of surprising everybody making this run. They hadn't done it before. It was Spurs. It was Dallas before that. All of a sudden, this Warriors team comes up, finally make that jump. Got offensive leader in Steph Curry, much like Jason Tatum. Got another offensive juggernaut on the other side who also plays excellent perimeter defense in Klay Thompson. Sounds just like Jaylen Brown, doesn't it? And then you've got the defensive specialist who sort of just makes everything else work on defense. For Golden State, it was Draymond Green playing the big man, you know, down low, multiple position defender. For Boston, though, it's Marcus Smart, who's a perimeter player, multiple position guard, unlocks everything on defense for this team. And part of me just kind of feels like this just might be the beginning of a run here for the Celtics in maybe a similar way that we saw the Warriors. I'm not saying 73 wins. I'm not saying 4 finals straight, right? We've never seen that happen before, but there are some uncanny similarities, in my opinion, between the way the Golden State built that thing up, drafted their own players, developed their own players, and became championship contenders, and the way that this Boston Celtics team drafted their own players, developed their own players, and have now become championship contenders.
Those are some interesting parallels. I hadn't thought of that before. I love drawing parallels. That's awesome.
It's what we love to do. Yes. It's just the one that stuck in my mind since I saw this matchup. And again, I'm just, I can't wait. I can't wait. Again, game one, June 2nd, finals began, and we'll obviously be covering it and talking about it here on the podcast throughout. But that's going to do it for the NBA playoffs here, and that's going to do it for this segment. So we're going to take a break and hit a mid-roll. And when we come back, we'll have some top five, some forgotten all-stars, a little bit fun on the backside of this podcast. So stick around, and we'll be right back.
Thanks for checking out the Sports Hour today. We appreciate you wherever you're listening. But if you haven't already, we recommend you check us out and give us a listen on Anchor.
Anchor allows us to provide the best product to you. You can go support the Sports Hour and become a permanent part of the show, like my saint of a mother, Sammy, and my father, David, did.
You can even leave us voice messages with your thoughts and opinions that we can use on the show. Prove to us that you know better than me and Mitchmo.
Moral of the story, people, be more like Sammy and David. Go find us at anchor.fm/thesportshour, guys, and become a part of the conversation. What the hell are you waiting for? Welcome back in the Sports Hour with Mitch Mo and Dallin. Second half of the show coming right at you.
Watch out.
We had some news. Look out. We had some news. We had a little bit of NBA conference final recap. We had our NBA finals preview. It was a little serious. It was a little bit analytical. Not serious. Not serious in a like a morbid sense, but you know,
nothing's like, ever been serious on this podcast, no. Mitch. We're how many episodes in? Never been a serious moment. No. Not one. Can't think of it.
No, can't recall one. But you know, I like Dallin mentioned at the top of the show, it's the off season. Sometimes the content doesn't write itself. You have to find a way to have a little fun in a time where there's a little bit of a lull. So we're going to have a little bit of fun. We're going to do some forgotten all-stars. We're going to do some top fives. Dallin has a top five this week of his own that he's going to bring to the show. He has to sing the jingle before he gives it. So that's a requirement. I'm sorry.
Wow. Never mind. I'm taking it back. I can't do it anymore.
No, you have to sing the jingle.
Sorry. No.
Well, you know the rules.
Disappoint the fans, but I can't do it. So.
Wow.
Of course I'll do it. Come on.
Yeah, you can't disappoint the fans like that.
It's a great jingle.
It's
fantastic. Well, you want to start off with you want to start off with some forgotten all-stars though, correct?
I do, and I'm going to start by giving my forgotten all-star to you. Is that okay?
Yeah, so we could get the worst out of the way first. I love it.
No. Actually,
no, I get it.
You might have to dig a little bit for this one, but not very deep. I think this is very gettable for you. Very, very gettable.
Oh, that's good.
And we've given you a lot of NFL recently. We're going to go to the NBA.
Oh, okay.
So here we go. We're going to the NBA.
Players to think about. That's good.
All right. Here we go. Ready?
Yes.
Okay. This player was the fourth overall pick in the 1998 NBA draft out of the University of North Carolina. A two-time All-Star, a one-time Sixth Man of the Year, and never played a minute for the team that drafted him.
Oh. Okay. So, two-time NBA All-Star, never played a minute for the team that drafted him.
Mm-hmm.
1998 out of UNC. Okay, I'm going to go first guess here. You said sixth man. That's got me thinking. So I'm going to say first guess here. I'm going to go, and I don't feel great about this, but let's go Jamal Crawford.
Right era, but no. That's it. That is incorrect.
No Jamal Crawford here. Okay. 1998, huh?
I thought UNC would be the giveaway here.
UNC, you know, UNC is an interesting one.
There's a lot of names that come out of there, but
right. Yeah. That's I think that's what makes it hard, right? Shoot. Let's go with another one. I don't think this is correct, but I'm gonna throw another name out there. I'm gonna go Elton Brand.
Oh, another good guess.
That's a good. Is that a good name?
That's a great name. Would you like an additional hint?
Sure. Let's go another hint. Yeah.
So, okay. Not? How about this? Do you want the team that he played his rookie year with, or the team that drafted him?
Probably the team he played with. I don't know if he didn't play for him, I don't know if I'll get the team that drafted him.
So his rookie season was spent with the Golden State Warriors.
Oh.
I can see the look on your face, and I'll just give you a hint. It's not the one you're thinking. So.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it might be. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so here's where I'm thinking, Mitch. So my last guess here, and I don't know the years. Don't know the years on this, but I am pretty sure that around this same time, maybe this guy's teammate was drafted. A little guy by the name of Vince Carter, we're all super familiar with, right?
Uh-huh.
But it's not Vince Carter, because Vince Carter was way beyond a two-time All-Star. Don't believe he ever won a sixth man. So it's got to be teammate somewhere around that era. And I think I got it. I think I got it.
Okay.
Am I going to not fail on the top five, Mitch? Am I going to not fail here on the top five?
I don't know.
Five?
I really hope you. I really
was
hope you
this get... player. I just want to tease this up. I'm going to guess this player regardless. This isn't changing my pick. But did this player get drafted by the team that his teammate Vince Carter would later go on to play with for quite a long time?
He was drafted to the same team as Vince Carter.
I'm not saying they played together, but he was drafted by that team.
Yes.
Okay. That's what I thought. Okay. We're going with, and I feel very confident now, and it feels good to get a top five back. I'm saying this like I know I got it. Imagine if I was wrong here. I'm going into this with the utmost confidence that we're looking for one Antoine Jamison.
Yeah, baby. Let's go.
Mitch,
let's go.
It's about it feels good to get one.
That was a good one. Yeah, I told you a little bit of digging, but you'd get there. You don't have to do that much. I was when you said just give me the team that he played for, I was like, there's no way he knows he was drafted by the Raptors. Like, there's no way he knows. But like, if I had told him Raptors, he would have been lost. But like, you obviously knew that. So
yeah,
I mean,
the
kudos
man
to you.
Thing. The six-man thing threw me off on Antoine Jamison, and I'm looking him up now, and it looks like he won six-man in 2003-04. That was his first year with the Wizards. Okay, because
that was his only year with the Mavs.
Oh, yes, you're right. Excuse me. Yes, yes. Yeah, you're right. Yeah, his only year with the Mavericks in 2003-2004, and then was an all-star that next year, yes, in Washington. Was only an all-star in Washington, and that one kind of threw me off because I was like, I didn't think that was the team that drafted him or the team he played with at the beginning. So there you go. Okay, Antoine Jamison. You'll love to see it. All right, Mitch. Well, I've got mine. There's no doubt Mitch is going to get his because, you know, of course he does. He's Mitch Mo. This is the segment is made for him. But the forgotten all-star here for you, Mitch, and we're talking about a former NFL player.
Okay.
This player was a four-time Pro Bowl running back who played all but one of his 10 seasons. All but one of the 10 seasons he played was with the team that drafted him.
Okay.
Four-time Pro Bowl running back who played all but one of his 10 seasons with the team that drafted him. He was a Heisman winner in college, a first-round pick, a college football Hall of Famer, but not an NFL Hall of Famer. And the final hint here for you is he was a Madden cover athlete. You know, say I got to keep it all topical in the forgotten all-star here. You know, we talked Madden cover today. That's the hint for you.
He's a four-time All-Star. Four-time Pro Bowler?
Yep.
Played all but one of his 10 years with the same team.
Yes, with the team that drafted him.
He's a Heisman Trophy winner, a college football Hall of Famer, but not an NFL Hall of Famer.
And he was on the cover of Madden.
Is he a Hall of Famer? I'm starting to think he was. And he didn't win a Heisman Trophy. I got so many names going through my head. It's not Reggie Bush. He played with way more than two teams.
Yeah, it's true.
Okay. I'm going to go. No, he's a Hall of Famer. Okay. I'm going to go with Eddie George.
And he does it in one take.
Oh, are you
serious?
Oh, my God.
On the first pick, he gets it because this segment was made for Mitch Mo. This segment was created in a laboratory for Mitch Mo's out there to just feel better about the useless information they have. How do you do this every time? Yeah, it's freaking Eddie George. I even had a great hint there. My extra hint was going to be that he was the first solo player to feature on the cover of Madden. Before 2001, John Madden was featured on every cover, and there were covers that had other athletes, but they always featured John Madden. 2001 Madden with Eddie George on the cover was the first time that there was the primary cover was only an athlete and not John Madden, and that was Eddie George. Wow. So there you go.
I was honestly between two, and it was between him and Marshall Faulk. And
okay. Yeah.
I was like, okay, I don't think Marshall Faulk won a Heisman, but he's clearly in the Hall of Fame.
Right.
And so, I just picked right,
yep.
I guess.
There you go.
I was going to guess him second if I did guess first, so yeah, there we go.
Well, Mitch has got it. That was great. Look at us each getting one. Feels
there
good.
There we go. That does feels good. Really, feels great.
Okay, Mitch, let's go to the top five, and you've got two top fives for us today.
We got a little bit of a backlog.
I've got a top five for us today. So let's do at least one of yours first here, wherever you want to go. And then we'll switch off.
All right. So we're going to go back to my top five positional series that we're going to be doing leading up to the NFL season that will be, kicking off in September. I had two this week, but we're going to start off with the linebackers, because that's what I promised next. So we're going to do on this week's edition of Mitch Mo's top five list of the week. We're going to be doing the top five linebackers of all time. And let me tell you, Dallin, actually for both these lists, for any of these top five lists, I guess, that I'm doing with this greatest of all time, lots of honorable mentions, very tough to narrow it down. So let's just get through the honorable mentions. Brian Urlacher, an honorable mention. Derek Thomas, Jack Ham, Chuck Bednarik, Bobby Bell, Willie Lanier, Kevin Green, and just for you, my friend, Luke Kuechly.
Honorable
mention list.
Thank you. Because if you didn't bring him up, I sure as hell was going to. So make the list. I get it, but I mean, come on.
I do my own research, but then I also kind of look and compare with other lists that have been made similar to this, right? Not a one mentioned Luke Kuechly.
Really?
So, and even one published in February of this year did not mention Luke Kuechly. So, like, I don't think he gets enough love. Short career, but God, was he good in that 7-year span that he was here. So, I think he deserves a little love. But let's go to number five. And of course, Dallin, we're doing a linebackers list. We're going to have a lot of Bears on this list.
Yes.
We already have one of the honorable mentions. Number five, give me Dick Butkus at number five. Played from 65 to 73, 8 years in the league, an 8-time All-Pro, and an 8-time Pro Bowler. Did not miss a single year. 2-time NFL Defensive Player of the Year. Hall of Fame class of 1978 and a member of the NFL All-100 team. Probably, I would say, and I know that this is a general opinion, is that Dick Butkus is the most feared player in NFL history. Mm. There's other guys you can make arguments for. Aaron Donald, you can make an argument for. You can make an argument for the crazies like Kevin Green I'm even blanking on some names here, but like you can make arguments for a lot. Warren Sapp. But Dick Butkus was such a stoic intimidation factor about him that you just, you looked through the face mask and you had the thick bushy mustache and the evil glare looking across at you from the second level, and you knew you were about to shit your pants because you just got hit so hard by Dick Butkus. And also played in an era where your hits didn't have to necessarily be clean. So he's got quite the highlight reel as well. So Dick Butkus, number five on this list.
Yeah. And an all NFL name team as well. I mean, come on. Yeah. That's a classic.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
when you've got Dick and Butt in your name, I mean, come on.
It might
10-year-olds at 10-year-olds everywhere are just loving that shit.
It's certainly an all-time like unfortunate name too, but you know, it's an all-timer, you know, nonetheless. Number four, my personal favorite player in NFL history. Samurai Mike Singletary. Played again a lifetime Bear from 81 to 92. That's 11 years in the league. A 9-time All-Pro and a 10-time Pro Bowler, Super Bowl 20 champion with the 85 Bears, 2-time Defensive Player of the Year, Hall of Fame class 1989. Samurai Mike is just, I mean, he is the prototype of what a middle linebacker should be cerebrally. Like, this guy was the smartest defensive player in NFL history. I mean, he not only knew his own assignments, he knew everyone else's assignments, and he probably knew the opposing offense's assignments. Like, he was just that cerebral of a player, an incredible football mind. We saw that translate over into his coaching career as a defensive coach over in Baltimore, how he turned around the career of Vernon Davis in San Francisco and led that team back to its winning ways before Jim Harbaugh took the reins. Mike Singletary is a football guy through and through. If you've ever seen an interview with him, a great interview. My favorite football player of all time. I should be wearing his jersey right now. It's literally right over there. But Mike Singletary, number four on the list. Number three, and I think this one's going to get a little bit of hate for maybe being a little low, and it's Ray Lewis. I think that some could argue, and I think that's a perfectly fine argument, that he's number two or one on this list. Right. He's played, you know, a long career, 96 to 2012, 10-time All-Pro, 13-time Pro Bowler, 2-time Super Bowl champion, a Super Bowl MVP, future Hall of Famer for sure, 2-time defensive player of the year. And again, when we talk about Mike Singletary's cerebral approach to the game, Ray Lewis's intense approach to the game is what sets him apart from the rest of the pack. This dude had the best entrance into a stadium of all time with the spastic dance. And it was
just talking about feared players earlier, but I mean, Ray Lewis is up there, huh?
And Ray Lewis, I think, is absolutely in that conversation with Dick Butkus. The sound bites you get from this guy are legendary. The most intense player of my lifetime that I've gotten to witness is Ray Lewis. And he has a very clear spot on this list. Number three, I'm sure some people are going to argue is a tad too low that you could put him at two or one. But I got two that are going to top him, on this list. Number two on the list is Jack Lambert, of the Pittsburgh Steelers, played there for 11 seasons, 74 to 84, 8-time All Pro, 9-time Pro Bowler, 4-time Super Bowl champion, the 74 Defensive Rookie of the Year, a 2-time Defensive Player of the Year, Hall of Fame class in 1990, and a part of the All-NFL 100 team. Look, he's part of the Steel Curtain defense. He's part of that Steelers dynasty of the 70s. Him and Jack Ham, who I mentioned in my honorable mentions, are probably a top three linebacker duo of all time, if not the best one. I think that you can make some arguments with the 85 Bears. You can make some arguments in other places. The 2000s Ravens had a really good linebacker duo as well. But Jack Lambert is an NFL Films highlight reel. He had missing teeth. Like, he looked like a linebacker. He was gristly in the face. He had missing teeth. He would yell at you and just tell you, just give up. Stay on the ground and give up. It's not going to get any better for you today. Like, he would say things like that in a cerebral way, but he's not trying to outsmart you. He is literally trying to intimidate you into the earth. And Jack Lambert, not only played that way with the mind games, but he played that way with his play. An absolute monster on the football field. Jack Lambert, number two on the list, but number one, and I think this was very clear that this guy was going to get number one. In my opinion, the greatest football player of all time is Lawrence Taylor. And Lawrence Taylor gets this honor. 12 years in the league, 10-time All-Pro, 10-time Pro Bowler, 2-time Super Bowl champion. It's going to keep going. 81 Defensive Rookie of the Year, 86 MVP as a linebacker, 1 MVP, 3-time Defensive Player of the Year, Hall of Fame class in 99, and part of the All-100 team. He hit like a freight train. He had finesse. His finesse moves were unmatched. I mean, this guy's speed off the edge is otherworldly. But also his impact that he made, you know, the force that he applied on impact, his ability to drive the guy not just backwards but 6 foot under, his pursuit of the ball, the way he broke Joe Theismann's leg, all of it is really, really good. And
he broke that leg so good, he's got to be number one.
Oh, God. But you know what? He, like I said, in my opinion, the greatest football player who ever lived is Lawrence Taylor, yep, regardless of position. And if I hold him in that high regard, he clearly has to be the greatest linebacker of all time.
All righty, Mitch. Well, that's a great list there. Do you want to give us the 5-1 once more?
Yeah, let's do that one more time. So number 5, Dick Butkus. Number 4, Mike Singletary. Number 3, Ray Lewis. Number 2, Jack Lambert. And number 1, the GOAT, Lawrence Taylor.
Great list, Mitch. Was there any player who you maybe debated at 5? Like, who was that next guy out that maybe you wanted to put on the list, but when it came down to it, you just couldn't find the spot?
Willie Lanier was another one. Legendary Chiefs linebacker. Really thought about him. Same thing with Chuck Bednarik. Another guy that I really wanted to put on there.
He's got, the college, the best linebacker in college, is named after, him. That award, when you've got an award named after yourself, you've probably done something right in your career, huh?
Yeah. And you know what? Full of inside linebackers, with the exception of Lawrence Taylor, he's the only outside linebacker on this list.
I thought that was an interesting trend as well.
And I also thought about putting Derek Thomas on here, that flexed inside and outside.
Yeah. Now, what about, let me throw a name out there, and obviously he is still playing, so certainly his career has to end before he's considered in this, but you got to think like Von Miller is going to find himself in this conversation at the end of his career, right? Having the success that he's had, winning multiple Super Bowls, now with the Broncos and with the Rams, and we'll even have a shot with Buffalo this next year, and winning Defensive Player of the Year. As he has, Super Bowl MVP. I mean, I feel like Von Miller is sort of on that path to being in that consideration, especially among outside linebackers, right? When we're talking less of the traditional inside linebacker types and more of the pass rush first kind of guys.
Yeah. And you're absolutely right. He's on that path to be in this conversation someday. The cool thing about doing these kinds of lists, and particularly in the NFL, is that with the exception of, I would say, very few people like Tom Brady, is that they get better with age. Kind of after they left the game, you start to appreciate their contribution to the game after their playing days are over, which is kind of sad, but also at the same time, I think totally fair with a game that's been around 100 plus years. Like, you have to wait, and you're going to weigh it against, weigh that person against everyone else over 100 plus year history. They definitely have to, age like a fine wine a little bit and to be able to get into these conversations. But I think Von Miller certainly will be in this conversation. There's guys like Kevin Green who have the sack accolades, but maybe may not age as well 20 years down the road. You're absolutely right. Von Miller should be a part of this conversation.
Yeah. Just the one name that sort of popped in my mind is I was thinking of maybe the modern players that maybe find themselves in this sort of situation.
TJ Watt could be there someday,
That is true as well. That's true as well. All right, Mitch, great top five list. You want to hold off on your second one? So my top five today, folks, it's not like a traditional top five there's no rankings. It's more of a grouping of five. And the way that I'm approaching this, and I'm going to kind of start doing this thing throughout the offseason as we look forward to the fall, and Mitch is doing a great job doing some NFL offseason content. I'm going to try to bring in some college football content, because as you guys know, I work in the world of college football covering BYU football, and so I pay attention to what's going on in the world of college football and who's up, who's down, who's good, who's not. And so I'm going to do some top fives throughout the summer, sort of looking ahead at the 2022 college football season. And in this first iteration, I've got five college quarterbacks you need to watch in 2022. That is the top five. Oh, I gotta do this right though.
Oh yes, you do.
So on today's edition of Mitch Moe's top five list of the week.
Beach Green Downs.
It's still Mitch Moe's. It's not me. It's not Downs. It's Mitch Moe's. Let's be honest.
Oh, well, it's your list.
Always yours. Okay. Yeah, but it's my version of Mitch Moe's top five list of the week.
Okay. All right.
It's like the late night show with David Letterman hosted by somebody else, right? You don't just change the name for that day to that guy, you know.
Sure.
Still his show. Still your show. Top five college quarterbacks to watch in 2022. So, and I'm focusing on more under the radar guys. Like, I'm not going to say these are all under the radar. Not by any means are these guys no one's heard of, right? I'm not saying that. But there's no Bryce Young. There's no C.J. Stroud. There's no Will Levis. There's no Tyler Van Dyke, right? There's none of these guys that people are really hyping up right now. I'm trying to dig a little deeper here, give you some names you might not be familiar with, an idea of why you should be paying attention to them in this upcoming college football season, Mitch. And let's start with a player that I am very excited about in 2022, a guy I'm very excited to see play this year because his team comes to Provo to take on the BYU Cougars a few weeks into the season. And that is Arkansas quarterback KJ Jefferson. I'm a big fan of KJ Jefferson, who will be a four-year guy, technically a junior, but a four-year player for Arkansas. 6'3", 245. This guy is not only a good college passer, but also very athletic, very dynamic. Last season alone, 2,600 passing yards, a 21-4 touchdown to interception ratio. Very good. While completing 67% of his passes. Oh, and then on top of that, rushing for 660 yards and six touchdowns for the Razorbacks. KJ Jefferson can do both at a very high level. In my opinion, he's probably the best dual threat quarterback in college football, besides the guys that run just a pure option, right? Or guys that aren't really running it that much and maybe could. This guy is doing it all for the Razorbacks, so I do think you're going to have a big season in 2022 at Arkansas. And KJ Jefferson, a guy who first year as a starter in 2021 and really just showed everything that you'd want to see. I think he can improve as a passer, and they're not really asking him to do much, right? You think about Treylon Burks coming out of the NFL or coming into the NFL out of Arkansas, and it was a lot of easy passes at the line of scrimmage, passes, yak opportunities. They weren't asking KJ to do much through the air, right? And I think that's where you're going to want to see improvement. As far as when we're talking about NFL prospects and what he could be at that level, but just as a college quarterback, this guy's legit. He's legit now, and he's going to be even better next year. And I do believe that Arkansas team is going to be a scary team in the SEC. So you better watch out there, Alabama, huh? You better watch out there, Georgia. I think Arkansas might surprise some people this year. I know people are high on Tennessee and some of the other teams there in that conference, but I'm big on the Razorbacks, and I'm big on KJ Jefferson. He's the first guy here on the quarterbacks to know in 2022, quarterbacks to watch in 2022.
Pow! High five, air five.
You like that one?
I love KJ Jefferson. In fact, I think he's going to be a big part of the reason why Arkansas will win 10 games next year.
Okay, yes. Yeah, I mean, obviously the loss to BYU that they'll inevitably have out here in Provo. You know, you got to make some other
one. I don't know about that, but I legitimately think Arkansas could win 10 games next year, and KJ Jefferson, I think, is going to be a big part of that. So I love that. Love that pick, Dal.
Yeah, no doubt, Mitch. The second guy on this list, and I'm not going to say I put him on here just for you because I am a fan. But I did do this for you. And that is, can I call him your guy? Your guy, Brennan Armstrong, the quarterback out of Virginia, the Wahoos in Lynchburg. Let's go. Mitch loves it. Yes. Brennan Armstrong, quarterback for Virginia. First time as a full-time starter last season in 2021 and put up just monster numbers. 4,449 passing yards, 31 touchdowns, 10 interceptions on 65% completion percentage. Oh, by the way, 250 rushing yards and 9 rushing touchdowns. Like, what a red zone threat this guy is. Sneaky athletic when he gets on the move, but it's not about the legs for Armstrong. It's about that arm and the volume that he's passing at and the high level that he's doing it at. If you look at PFF grading and of returning starters next year, he's one of the top returning starters. When you look at PFF grading, a 91.8 offensive PFF grade in 2021, that's good for fourth among college quarterbacks last season, fourth best offensive PFF grade. He was eighth best in the passing grade, 90.3 passing grade, and the 79.9 rushing grade is good for 13th among quarterbacks. So he is one of the top returners just statistically. You look at his grading. And this Virginia team, you know, they will be going through sort of a new transition here. Tony Elliott in there was the DC at Clemson, will take over there for Bronco Mendenhall. So I don't know if Virginia is going to be a great team, but I think Brennan Armstrong is going to be able to put up some big numbers again, and perhaps those two seasons of production will be enough to get him a good shot in the NFL.
He'll let them compete in the ACC. I don't think they're going to be like a top 25 team or anything like that, but he will let them compete in the ACC. That's for my sure. guy, Dallin. That's my guy. I love it. Brennan Armstrong, let's go.
I know it's your guy, and that's, you know, again, like I saw Armstrong play in Provo last year in a great game against BYU, a contest that ended up 66-49, just a crazy offensive output in that game. And there was a point where they were down like 3 touchdowns in the second quarter. And in the blink of an eye, Armstrong had them back in the game. It was like tied immediately. Like, I mean, it was just quick score on the ground, making plays. It was impressive. Insane. I haven't seen talent. A quarterback play at that level very often in college football. He was on one, and he was on one for a lot last season. So I expect big things out of Brennan Armstrong. Definitely a guy to know. Another one, Mitch, for you. And this is let's see. We've had an SEC quarterback, but an ACC quarterback. This guy out of the University of Maryland. That's Big Ten. A little Big Ten here, right?
Big Ten. Hey, little Big Ten. You're hitting all the the Power Fives, Dallas.
I didn't mean to, but I am. Mitch, I did this one just for you.
Oh, yeah.
It's the brother of your favorite NFL player. We're talking about Taulia Tagovailoa, the younger brother of Tua Tagovailoa, starting quarterback.
Is he a lefty? I just want to know.
The Miami Dolphins. I don't actually know if he's a lefty or righty. I don't remember that off the top of my head. I don't know. I don't know if he's a lefty or righty.
Because if he's a righty, he'll probably be okay. So
you're good if he's a righty. If he's a lefty, you're out again. But no. Tualia started his career at Alabama, following his brother there in 2019.
His name is Tualia?
Taulia. Taulia. Yep.
I was gonna say, so they just took Tua's name and made it longer and gave it to his brother. Come on.
Kind of. Yeah, basically. You know, it's fine. Taulia had a really pretty good year last year. Again, started his career at Alabama 2019, coming out of Hawaii. Transferred to Maryland, didn't play very much. Played some. 4 games in 2020. And then last year, his other sophomore season, takes over the full-time starter for the Terrapins. And again, had a really good season, 3,800 yards passing, 26 touchdowns to 11 interceptions, 69% completion percentage. Tua, I'm going to call him Tua, but Taulia, very similar to his brother, Tua, very similar in build. He's 5'11", 205, maybe more like 6 foot, but not big guy. It's all going to be about the extreme accuracy in the pocket. Field manager, get the ball out to playmakers. That's his skill set, but he does it at a very high level. And again, I brought up PFF grading for Brennan Armstrong and some of the returning starters in college football, but Taulia's right up there. He had a 90.8 PFF grade on offense, which was good for 13th among active quarterbacks last year. His 88.8 passing grade was also good for 13th among quarterbacks. and then a 77.5 rushing grade, good for 18th. So can do a little bit, you know, with the legs when he needs to. And obviously, you know, that's not the offense that they're predicated on there in Maryland, but has that sort of, you know, bit of that ability as well. So Taulia is a guy I think is really going to make a name for himself here in 2022. And when you have the same name as somebody in the NFL, like, teams just automatically trust that much more, right? No, regardless of how successful Tua is next year with the Miami Dolphins, just having a brother in the NFL is going to help sort of elevate his stock, make teams and media members more comfortable talking about him. And I do think he could definitely be a riser. So certainly a name to watch is Taulia Tagovailoa, quarterback out of Maryland.
Yeah, you mentioned the game manager, the field manager type guy. And I instantly, when I went to college quarterbacks, I went to Mac Jones. A successful college quarterback that didn't have to blow you away with anything that he did with his arm. He was a great manager of a game. So, you know, there's guys that make a living on that. And if he's able to do that, man, he has a bright future ahead of him, as long as he doesn't throw passes like his brother does, because his brother stinks.
I guess so, Mitch. The next name here, number four here, I'm listening in no particular order here. These are just five quarterbacks I do think you need to pay attention to. And before I get to my group of five guy, because I've got one group of five quarterback in here. We've had some power five guy, you know, SEC, ACC, Big Ten. I've got to give a shout out to my guy, somebody I know very well. In fact, I spent every Monday night at his house during the past football season. It is Jared Hall, the quarterback out of BYU. And that might seem easy to you. You're like, Dallin, you cover BYU. Of course, you're bringing up Jared Hall. But not so fast, people. Because I'm not the only one that's looking ahead at Jared Hall with a little bit of anticipation. Mel Kiper, the Mel Kiper, put out his early positional rankings for the 2023 draft. And who did he have number six among quarterbacks in next year's draft? Well, Jared Hall, quarterback out of BYU. In fact, Mitch, the top five quarterbacks on his power rankings were all projected in the top 25 for Mel Kiper, making them first round picks, which essentially makes Jared Hall top 50 player, early second, mid second, according to Mel Kiper. That's pretty big hype. That's pretty big hype for the quarterback out of BYU. And Jared Hall had a pretty good season last year. First year as a starter, replacing Zach Wilson, played in 10 games, threw for over 2,500 yards, a 20-5 touchdown interception ratio, completed about 64% of his passes. Also ran for 300 yards, three touchdowns. He had averaged 8.6 yards per carry in non-sack rushing yards. In college, they combine sack yardage with your rushing yardage, which is dumb. So it skews rushing numbers. But suffice it to say, when he took it and ran, Jaron was very good with it, has a lot of ability with the feet, dual threat athlete. And what he showed as a passer was, we talked about pocket passing and that ability to get the ball out. That's what Jaron Hall did at a really high level last year for BYU. He also totes a pretty good deep ball. He's one of the best deep ball passers in college football last year, and I think he expands upon that more this year. I think he expands upon the rushing game more, and if he can solidify himself as a solid dual threat type of player, I think he'll be even higher on NFL draft boards going into the 2023 draft. As far as returning, you know, his PFF grade, 89.2 PFF grade last year was good for 18th among active quarterbacks. 83.3 passing grade, good for 21st. And he had the highest rushing grade of any of the quarterbacks we're going to talk about too today, 80.4, good for 11th among qualifying quarterbacks last year. So Jaron Hall, a guy that I really do think he's going to go to the NFL. He's 24 years old. He's married. He has a kid. This is going to be his last season at BYU, barring injuries. And I do think he has the potential to be for sure a day two pick. Maybe even sneak into that day one conversation, depending on how well it goes this year. But I am going to be pounding the table for Jaron Hall. Yes, he's a BYU guy, but, you know, I had to do it. I had to do it, Mitch.
Well, you've been high on him since last year. So, like, you've gotten to know him a little bit off the field, and sounds like a great guy off the field, and off the field character matters when you're going to the NFL. So, sounds like he's got, he's got room for growth and a lot of high expectations for him. And I'm excited to see where Jaren Hall winds up.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah, I definitely think he has high potential in 2022. Should be a fun one to watch. Mitch, the final player here in this college quarterbacks to know and to watch in 2022, we're going to go with a group of five guy here. A guy who almost maybe wasn't group of five this year, but decided to stick around and not transfer, as we see so often in the world of college football. And we're talking about Jake Haener. Mm. Haener, I hardly know her. The quarterback out of Fresno State. And as I alluded, I know, sorry, I couldn't help it. his head coach, Kalen DeBoer, got the job at UW at the University of Washington, replacing Jimmy Lake up there in Seattle. And he had the option and did consider transferring back up there, did start his career at Washington coming out of high school, but elected to remain at Fresno State with the Bulldogs because they brought back Jeff Tedford, right? His former head coach who he'd been with previously at Fresno State, who comes back to replace DeBoer. And Haener was the guy who had put up big numbers last year at the Group of Five level in the Mountain West, 4,000 yards, 33 touchdowns, 9 picks on 67% completion percentage. We talked about some of the rushing ability of some of these other quarterbacks. Haener is not that. Haener is much more in the mold of like Carson Strong. You think about the Nevada quarterback coming out this last year. He obviously had injury issues that's hurt his draft stock, but a pocket guy. But he can sling it. Haener can sling it. He put up good numbers last year. He had a decent season in 2020 in just 6 games, sort of showing that promise. And last year really put it together. You know, again, had the opportunity to go to the Power 5 level, play at Washington, but is sticking by Fresno State and giving it one more shot there, which I do respect. And I think he's going to be able to put up big numbers because of that. Will the Group of Five talent level, will his lack of athleticism translate to like a high draft position? Probably not. He's not the kind of quarterback that NFL teams are looking for, but certainly can sling it. And certainly he's going to put up big numbers this year at the Group of Five level. Maybe one of, you know, I'll say this now. I put him on the list. He's the best Group of Five quarterback out there. I believe that. I think there's some names that you could consider. Some other names I wrote down at the Group of Five level: Tanner Mordecai, quarterback out of SMU; Clayton Toon, the quarterback out of Houston; Grayson McCall, quarterback out of Coastal Carolina. I think all those are very talented guys, but I really think Haener's got it. And I, you know, if he's a mid round pick in next year's draft, you know, I think that's probably reasonable. But I think he's gonna have a big year in college football. Jake Haener, quarterback out of Fresno State.
Definitely a reason to keep on him. I mean, we saw the start that Fresno State had coming into last year, and they started hot. They had a little bit of a road bump, but they stayed pretty consistent throughout the year. And Jacob Haener actually, you know, had a fantastic season under center. So
yeah, 10 wins last year for the Bulldogs, yeah, as you mentioned. So
yeah, Dallin, run through that five one more time before we maybe ask some questions about maybe who you left off that list.
Okay. Yeah, the five college quarterbacks to watch in 2022. This is what I'm giving you right now. KJ Jefferson, the quarterback out of Arkansas; Brennan Armstrong of West Virginia; Taulia Tagovailoa out of Maryland; Jaren Hall out of BYU; and Jake Haener out of Fresno State. I mentioned some of the names on my honorable mentions already. Tanner Mordecai out of SMU, Clayton Toon out of Houston, Grayson McCall out of Coastal Carolina. The other two names I mentioned, this one name was a rising name I've seen, which is kind of why I left him off, because I think he's getting quite a bit of love right now. And that's Devin Leary, the quarterback out of NC State. A lot of people high on the Wolfpack this year, and Devin Leary in particular. In fact, I mentioned Mel Kiper earlier in his draft rankings. Well, he has Devin Leary as the number 8 quarterback on his 2023 draft position rankings. So even Mel Kiper a little higher there on Devin Leary out of NC State. And then Spencer Rattler was the other name I wrote down, going to South Carolina. He didn't have, you know, a down season at Oklahoma. Obviously it wasn't what we expected, but he was not bad, right? I think a lot of people just think he was like awful. Wasn't bad. I think he has a chance to turn it around in South Carolina, and he's not going to be the number one overall pick, right, as we sort of saw going into the 2022 draft last offseason, but certainly has that potential still, and I think he has a good bounce back season in South Carolina.
Okay, so I got a question, because you were talking about guys to watch, and we've seen the tape on this guy and just the tremendous arm talent that I've seen. what's your stance on Quinn Ewers?
Yeah, Ewers is a tough one because, I mean, we're talking about a guy who's like not played at all, right? And so we're just projecting out of high school. Honestly, I like Casey Thompson, right? Like, I don't want to, you know, it's hard to just give that guy the job at Texas, right? And I know Sark, and I know he probably will, but obviously he's got high potential. But yeah, Ewers, I'm just gonna wait and see on a guy like Ewers who's getting a lot of hype. A guy like Jackson Dart at Ole Miss, started at USC last year. He was a quarterback from Utah high school here, and he's getting a lot of hype too. But these are just young guys. They're gonna have to, grind, and there are new positions, new schools. That's easier said than done. So I'm gonna wait a little more on those guys, but certainly Ewers is a name to watch. Could be a rising star this year. Absolutely.
Yeah. Some other names that crossed my mind was Caleb Williams. We don't know where he's at yet.
Well, USC
or USC. Right? Excuse me. You're right. Yeah, you're right. USC. Keaton Slovis was another one that crossed my mind.
He's headed to Pitt, right, to replace Kenny Pickett up there, coming out of USC. And I think Slovis should be in a good position there with the Panthers.
Yeah. Dylan Gabriel, the replacement at Oklahoma, was another one to think about. And then quite honestly, JJ McCarthy for the Wolverines. He's a former five-star recruit that will be filling in.
I don't trust Michigan in their offense, and I don't trust the quarterbacks to be anything.
I don't trust Michigan quarterbacks since Tom Brady.
That's a tough one there for him. He's going to have to change the narrative there or something. But certainly should be a fun year. But yeah, those are just some of the names I'm thinking of, some of the guys I'm thinking of heading into 2022. So that's it for my top five, Mitch. You've got one more top five for us before we wrap up the show.
I do have one more top five for you, and we're going to stick with the positional, the all-time positional top five. And on this second edition of the episode of Mitch Moe's Top Five List of the Week. Man, we're wearing that one out today. It is going to be the running backs. The running backs. I think we're going to switch it up and go offense. We've done two defensive. Time to switch it up a little bit.
Nice.
Honorable mentions, LaDainian Tomlinson, Adrian Peterson, Earl Campbell, Marcus Allen, Eric Dickerson, Gale Sayers, Curtis Martin, big names.
The big hell names of an honorable mentions.
I mean, my God, it pained me to keep some of these out. Pained me. But we're talking about the GOATs here, and it's all speculative. It's all speculative. Of course, this is going to be different from Dallin's probably, but let's just jump right into it. Number five, and some people are going to argue it's too low. Some people put him as the greatest running back of all time. I don't think he is. Emmitt Smith is number five on the list. 1,835 rushing yards, over 226 career games, 164 rushing touchdowns. A total of 21,579 yards from scrimmage. Pro Football Hall of Fame class 2010, and part of the All 100 team. As a three-time Super Bowl champion, part of that Dallas dynasty of the 90s. Super Bowl MVP and Super Bowl 28, excuse me. He holds the NFL record for career rushing touchdowns. Seasons with at least 1,000 yards rushing at 11, and as well as a career for 100-yard rushing games at 78. How do you put a guy like that at number five? There are just more dynamic
guys. There's just a lot of really good players out there.
There are a lot of really good guys out there. Number four on the list, and I don't think he's going to make a lot of people's top fives, but I like him here at number four. I'm going Marshall Faulk at number four.
Okay. I love Marshall Faulk. Aztec legend out of the old WAC in the 90s. Man, I'm not going to argue there.
I mean, he was part of the greatest show on turf, was Super Bowl champion, two MVP awards as a running back, which now we talk about the MVP award as a almost exclusively a quarterback award. Won two of them back-to-back, 2000 and 2001. Part of the Pro Football Hall of Fame class of 2011. 100 rushing touchdowns, 136 total touchdowns. A lot of people forget this guy was a receiving weapon. In fact, received almost 7,000 yards in his career out of the running back position. Just one of those do-it-all backs that I don't think we had a whole lot of at this point in NFL history. And he was kind of the first one. He kind of made way for the LaDainian Tomlinsons, the Christian McCaffreys, the Aaron Jones, these high reception running backs that are able to not only run the ball, but catch the ball out of the backfield. He was one of those first guys to do this and really make it kind of a primary part of their game. So I put Marshall Faulk at number four. Number three, probably my favorite nickname in all of NFL history, the human joystick Barry Sanders. this guy is a highlight machine. 15,269 rushing yards, 99 rushing touchdowns, 109 total touchdowns over his career with a little over 18,000 total all-purpose yards. Hall of Fame class 2004 and part of the all 100 team. Had a short career, and kind of when he walked away, it was surprising because he seemed like he was still in his prime. He was fourth in all-time career rushing yards despite only playing 10 seasons. Like, this guy was going to be putting up absolutely monster numbers, took home two MVP awards, one of them the year before he retired, and had four rushing titles back-to-back years the year before he retired. Like, this guy was just catching his stride at now a time in NFL history where we see guys starting to decline. He was just starting to catch his stride. He could have been really, truly the greatest running back of all time had he decided to not hang it up. But he just a guy that defies the laws of physics, I guess, knew what was coming, and he just needed to call it quits when he needed to call it quits. So Barry Sanders, number three on the list. Number two, Jim Brown. And Jim Brown is, I mean, not only a huge figurehead for football, but a big figurehead for African Americans in sports as a whole. This guy is considered by most, I think, the greatest running back of all time. And I have a hard time arguing with him, even though I got a different guy at number one. Also, very short career, only 8 years spent in the league, 12,000 rushing yards in 8 years, 106 rushing touchdowns, 126 total touchdowns in 8 years, Dallin. 8 years, 126 total touchdowns. Hall of Fame class in 1971, part of the All 100 team. Look, he's the only running back in NFL history to average more than 100 yards per game rushing over his entire career at 104. Wow. He holds the NFL record for most yards per carry at 5.2, an 8-time rushing champion, 4-time NFL MVP, All-Pro 8 times. I mean, this guy was just clearly the man, and I am putting him at number two.
Because there's a Chicago Bear at number one. Come on. I mean, who could have seen this coming? Jeez. Mitch Mo elevates the Bears to a top of a list. Check it off your Sports Hour bingo.
Number one is sweetness, Walter Payton. I mean, he has to be number one on my list. He has to be. And look. He's a 3-time league MVP, 76, 78, or 76, 77, and 85, right? He was part of the 85 Bears, won that MVP in 85. 9-time Pro Bowler, Super Bowl champion, Super Bowl 20. Why he carries the greatest running back of all time for me is he was putting up these numbers in a time. This was pre-Jim McMahon, pre-Mike Ditka, and even into the beginning of Mike Ditka's tenure, where he was carrying the ball at exceptional, like, workloads. because they didn't have anyone to throw the ball to. This guy was literally the epitome of a workhorse. When it didn't have to be asked, you know, when he was like, I mean, let me just read you these numbers. So 1976, 311 carries. 1977, 339, 333 and 78, 369 and 79. That is three consecutive years of over 300 carries.
Wow.
He's also catching the ball over 20 times a season. So we're talking about 340 plus touches a season for four consecutive seasons. And by the way, they're not winning at that point. They're not winning. So it seems like a lost cause for Walter Payton. But what does he do? He keeps his head down and he keeps digging with the Bears. And they finally get that Super Bowl run in 1985 with Mike Ditka and Buddy Ryan. And I mean, the epitome of a workhorse. He had 381 carries in 1984. 381.
NFL agents today are shaking in their boots at that number.
If I'm counting this correctly, there was only three seasons in his entire career, his entire 13-year career, three seasons where he didn't have over 300 carries.
Wow.
I mean, workhorse. And put the numbers up that he did. Walter Payton's got to be at the top of the list. A football man's man.
You know, listen, I'm not going to argue with you about your list, right? I mean, it's Mitch Moe's top five list of the week. You put whatever the hell you want at the top of it. I have no problem with Walter Payton. You put those numbers into perspective, though. Talk about 300 carries. Can you give me a guess how many players in the NFL last year you think reached 300 rushing attempts for the season? And mind you, we're talking about 17 games, right? Back in that day, they were playing 14, right? At that point, so we're talking even more games. But that aside, how many players do you think hit 300 rushing attempts in 2021 in the NFL?
Well, if Derrick Henry played a full year, I would say one. So I'm going to go zero.
It was actually two.
Oh, but just two. Okay.
Two. Now, Jonathan Taylor led the league.
Oh, that makes sense.
332 rushing attempts. And Najee Harris had 307.
Okay.
Joe Mixon had 292, and the next closest is Antonio Gibson at 258. So there's really just three guys that carried that type of workload last year. Taylor, Harris, and Mixon all played at least 16 games. And, like, if you go back 15 years, I bet you there's a dozen guys every year that had 300 rushing attempts. It is crazy how much that has changed. And when you put those numbers into perspective of what we know in the modern NFL and what guys were asked to do at that time, pretty remarkable.
Here's a fun fact. Oh, wow. I'm now looking at this. So he carried the ball 300-plus times every year but 3 years. Those 3 years, he was hurt, and those were the only 3 years he didn't rush for over 1,200 yards. Every other year, 1,200 yards. I mean, wow.
There you go.
I mean, workhorse, just a workhorse, man.
Yeah, incredible. Mitch, give the top five one more time for the people. Your top five running backs of all time in the NFL.
Top five of all time. Number five, I have Emmitt Smith. Number four, I have Marshall Faulk. Number three, Barry Sanders, the human joystick. Number two, Jim Brown. And number one, Sweetness, Walter Payton.
That's a great list. That's a great list, my friend. I probably would have been a little higher on Barry Sanders, personally.
Sure.
I probably would have had him at least top two, maybe number one. And I think I would have. I think I would have given a little love to LT there. I just loved the Damian Tomlinson. And that, listen, I get it. Marshall Faulk, great. Emmitt Smith, great. I mean, I don't know who you take off, but LT is one of those names. I think I probably, on my list, he probably finds a way to sneak on, you know?
So I almost, like I said, Emmitt Smith, some people regard him as the greatest running back of
right,
all time.
Right.
So, and not just Cowboys fans, even though they're homers, not just Cowboys fans, but like Emmitt Smith was almost off this list in favor of LT.
Yep.
Because I think Marshall Faulk was so important to the development of the dual threat running back. He had to make the list for me.
Okay. I love it. Yeah. No, I feel it. Great list, my friend. And a great podcast today. Look at that. We've come to the end of the Sports Hour today. And guys, you've been listening and we appreciate you sticking around as always and joining us on this beautiful adventure. We don't always know where we're going every week. You know, we've got a game plan. We've got a rundown. Sometimes we don't know where the journey will take us. And we are grateful to be on the journey with you. Look at that.
Sometimes you just got to shoot from the hip a little bit, you know?
A little bit of improv never hurt anybody.
Yeah.
If you don't already, guys, go ahead and give us a follow on our social medias. The Twitter is at Sports Hour Guys. Instagram at The Sports Hour Guys. The TikTok at The Sports Hour Guys. You can also follow me on Twitter at Lil Thoit. Check out the website, thesportshourguys.wordpress.com. Mitch, remind the people about Anchor.
Anchor is the only place that you can become a permanent part of the conversation. Go to anchor.fm/thesportshourguys. Leave us a voice message. We'll play it live right here on the show and answer your question. You'll become a permanent part of the conversation forever. You will be on the Sports Hour. It's in there forever. It's in there forever.
It's there.
Yeah, it's in there forever.
Part of history.
You can also be a contributing member of the show if you so wish to be. We would truly appreciate it. Be more like Sammy and David. You can also go on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, wherever you listen to your podcast. Leave us a rating or review on Apple Podcasts. Tell us that we suck. Because, Dallin, that is the only way that we can get better.
Oh, it is the only way that we can get better. Guys, enjoy June. Enjoy the new month. New month, new opportunities. NBA Finals going on. We'll love that. We'll enjoy that. And we'll continue to recap that on the next podcast. And even more ahead on the Sports Hour. So we love you. We appreciate you. Mitch combing his beautiful mustache. We will catch you next week.
Mustache game strong. See ya!